Hello everyone, you're listening to Skip Intro, and this is Ayman Rashad. In the studio with me is Ian McNally and Julian Yap, and today we are talking about a new movie starring Patrick Wilson, the king of horror. He's in every horror movie nowadays, and the movie is called In the Tall Grass.
Something's not right about this. I think we should head back to the road.
Becky?
Travis?
Who are you? What's going on?
I came looking for you!
What?
How did you get here before us?
I don't know.
My boy, he's lost in here too.
This is nuts!
It's only a feel.
What's happening?
He went the other way!
Natalie! I'm never gonna find her.
You can find things. But it's easier once they're dead.
So, you've seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's based on a short story, I believe, by Stephen King and his son, Joe Hill. I'm constantly annoyed that this movie's not called In the Tall, Tall Grass. I kind of think it would just roll off the tongue.
There were more annoying things about this movie than the title, to be honest.
So it's directed by Vincent Natali, who also directed Split and a movie we've talked about on the show before called Cube.
Splice, not Split.
Wrong Splice.
One. Yeah, that's a different movie altogether. What caught? And in it, essentially, there's a guy and a girl. We can't even say whether they're a couple or not, because there's an awful lot of stuff that's revealed through action in this movie. It's Becky and Cal are running off to San Diego. She is pregnant, and they stop because she's feeling sick, and they hear a voice from this field, and it's a boy calling out for help. And once they go in to find him, all is not well in this field. They can't seem to leave. And we can't really say any more about the plot, I don't think. There's a mystery to it, but halfway along that path, you'll figure out what type of movie, and we'll talk a little bit about those type of movies later on, in that it is a field of infinite probabilities, I think. You know, there's a probability field around this field, if you know anything about science. It's like there's options and there's things that keep happening, and I think it's safe to say there's kind of time loopiness going on.
Yeah, because in the trailer, there is one bit when the girl says to her friend or wherever, how did you get here before us?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know. So
He's like, I've been looking for you for like a month or two or something.
Yeah, so he suggests there is some kind of
that there's going to be timey-wimey stuff going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you start seeing there's various versions of this kid that's going around as like from clean to filthy dirty.
Yeah.
You know, also Patrick Wilson from clean to filthy dirty in the head.
From real estate to not that real estate. I don't know.
There's a joke in the 80s and 90s that all real estate agents are psychopaths anyway, I think.
He plays that really well. He goes from he does the great like American face on a bench sort of real estate guy with the little
with the
mustache and like the polo shirt. Like he's like ready to sell you a house.
He isn't.
Yeah.
I think I didn't do the research before this. We should have categorized all the Patrick Wilson roles into mustache and no mustache. Because he kind of looks like Chris Pratt's elder psychopath jock brother, right?
Yeah, he does a bit.
And he comes off that way.
Yeah, he has an unsettlingness about him that makes him so great for horror that it's almost kind of weird to see him in this just because it's not that great a horror.
And we don't recognize any of the other actors. I don't recognize him from anything, right?
Which is fine. You know, you got to cast a bunch of unknowns. It's a small film. But wow, it's not a lot.
Yeah.
It's an hour or 40 minutes or nothing.
I was thinking it's a little bit like the Stephen King movie, The Mist, but like a high school production of it where they don't have as many cast members, and instead of having to buy a smoke machine, they've just got those wavy tube men that they have outside car dealerships, but they're painted green.
Yeah.
Like that's a very negative way of reviewing it, but it is that same kind of story of normal, air quotes, people trapped in a weird situation, slightly supernatural, and how people react to that. Like in The Mist, it's like you've got literally, you know, one person representing every type of humanity, and they slowly go insane while there's monsters at the door.
So like beyond the horror, there isn't any like underlying
is there horror
theme or underlying, I don't know, some kind of other
nature sucks
story or message they're trying to
They try to bring in a few supernatural elements, kind of. I don't want to give it away. I think it's not that surprising. It doesn't really catch you off guard the second it shows up on screen. So I don't think it actually had the effect that it was supposed to have. Maybe it's better translated in the short story as being actually terrifying. I don't know. It left me a bit... I know the point of it is you're supposed to be left wanting. You're supposed to be questioning what this is, what's the bigger evil behind it, or what's the bigger story behind it. But I kind of don't care just because everything that came before it just kind of sucked.
Because
I don't know.
There is this, like, they keep running into different versions of the same people. There is a loop of some sort going on. But if you're doing that kind of movie, you have to have your rules worked out really well in advance.
And they don't do that. They don't have it worked out.
Near the climax of the movie, there's like a few things happen. And I'm like, is that the Travis from this bit? Or is this just the same one from earlier? He just got back up again?
Yep.
And, or, you know, the Becky bit leaves, makes a phone call, and it's like, was that the phone call earlier, or was that a phone call to another loop? It, like, you know, in Groundhog Day and a list of movies we'll talk about later, there is very set rules. He dies, he comes back, you know, and he hears Sonny and Cher play on the radio. In this, it's not very clear at all. It's you walk a little bit in one direction. And I liked that idea of the, you know, it's a kind of, it's Schrodinger's field.
Yeah.
If you're not looking at something in the field, it will move. And there's a genius moment where someone gets on their shoulders and I'm finally, yes, brilliant, this is how we're going to do it. But of course, they get distracted and the kid gets off the shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, when he gets back up, the thing they were heading to is no longer seen.
Yeah.
I like that kind of thing. And I just wanted to be more puzzled by it and confused by it. Instead, it was just like, ugh, this is not in a good way.
When it starts to actually solve the problems that it has set out in the earlier parts, it gets so boring and a bit one note. You kind of don't care about any of the actors. They forget a bit of the characters for a while and then they come back to it. The first, I think, third or quarter of the film, I think, is pretty good.
There's the moment
when they're actually setting it up,
when Travis turns up and you're like, oh, I thought we were going to do something else with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You thought you were going to be following certain characters and now you're following other characters and then some other characters pop up again. Like, that was interesting.
Yeah.
I think it kind of goes weirdly off the rails when there's that bizarre heat stroke, weird grass baby vision.
Yeah, that's not great.
It doesn't really fit in with the rest of it. Like, most of it is just like, look at the grass. 'Tis menacing. But then there's this weird vision thing going on. And, you know, again, it's a thing in slasher movies. Your villain has to be well-defined. You know, if they walk, they walk. If they run, they run. Mm. If they can all of a sudden teleport, then you get a little bit, you know, it's not as satisfying. It's the same with the grass stuff. There's like, at certain points, it seems like it's almost whipping after people.
Yeah.
But then it's not.
Because there are some bits when this very tall grass. So this grass, for anyone who doesn't know,
there's a lot of grass in this
movie. Yeah, it's as tall as maybe corn. So it goes just above your head.
Is it all set in the grass field?
Yeah, which is, it's interesting. Right.
I think there's two other locations.
Okay.
It doesn't really.
In the trailer, there's some kind of shed or something like that.
And it's a church.
It's just a church, okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are possibilities here that they could have played with where then they do touch on it. You know, like the grass moves and it looks, it is kind of terrifying when you go through the grass and you can see your vision can't go that far. You can go maybe a meter. You can't go that far into the grass. They could have played on that so much more. And I think just to see, you know, if you're going to go into this, it's, I think, interesting enough that because it's not super high concept, it's not super low concept. It's
super middle concept.
Super middle concept. But then once you get into it, they don't use that concept well enough. So like I think it's interesting enough to explore the concept to actually get you to watch it. I think it should have been a short film. It's a short story. Should have made it a short film. This would have been great in a 20 or 30 minute.
Yeah. Well, I was intrigued watching the trailer, but hearing your reviews.
That's not. No, I think anyone who enjoys Stephen King, I think, would enjoy this. Yeah, and Patrick Wilson, he's great in it. Do it to, you know, fill up your Stephen King filmography.
All right, guys, we've been talking about In the Tall Grass. So let us know if you are looking forward to see it. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at skipintromy. And you can write us at movies@bfm.my. And coming up, we are going to continue our conversation on Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Skip Intro with Ayman, Ian and Julian. And earlier, we heard their review of In the Tall Grass. And if you missed it, you can catch it on podcast on our app and website. So In the Tall Grass is a medium concept film is what you guys described it just now. And it involves a lot of timey-wimey stuff, a lot of time loop movies. And of course, tons of other movies have also explored the idea of time travel in many different ways. So I think it's a good time to talk about our favorite time travel movies.
Yeah, I think it's not quite... While watching The Tall Grass, I kept thinking of movies doing elements of it better.
Okay.
There's like, there's one point where it's not quite time travel. It's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of probability. It's like there's different paths you could take. And one character kind of, it's again like, I think, you know, there's a, in The Mist, there's a, is it Marcia Gay Harden? She kind of plays someone who's like, oh, I'm the appointed prophet. There's usually in Stephen King novels, there can be this kind of guy, right? They have that kind of appointed person who is like, they kind of know what's going on and they're siding with the evil kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point where one of our heroes, like you see multiple endings to their threats. And it's like, it's another one of these things where they've set out this scene, but they haven't really explained it or they haven't really earned it. And it doesn't really have a payoff. There's a Australian-British movie that, these aren't time travel movies that I'm thinking of. They're just like, there's a loop and you don't know why. Because there's a lot of time, like it's time travel, but like if there's no machine in a lot of ones that really, really stick with me. This one was this one with Melissa George called Triangle. And it's about this woman who gets on a boat with her friends. She's a bit withdrawn and they end up capsizing the boat and finding this liner. And they get on the liner and they're just going around trying to find help. And there's a shadowy figure on the boat. And as it goes through, every loop reveals something more. You stay with her throughout all the loops. And so at first, it's very much like you think, well, this is a classic horror trope. This is like the final girl. You know, we're going to stick with her. And it completely twists that. At one point, a character walks around a corner on the deck and just sees tens of their body.
Cool.
Ooh.
Because they've been eaten by seagulls. It's a horrifying, terrifying image. And when you realize, when you watch that, you think, this is not, I thought this was going to be like a, you know, a spooky boat movie. This is going into a weird level because there's no like, oh, they're not doing a PhD on time travel or any of that kind of stuff. And it's just, it gets creepier from that point onward. It reminded me a little bit of another movie called Kill List, where when it ends, you kind of sit there with it going like, that's messed up. Like, that's a really messed up movie, not in a horror-y way, not in a gore way. Just in, if you were trapped in that situation, what would you do?
I don't think I've ever seen... I think In the Tall Grass is the first horror film that I've seen that has utilized this time loop
concept.
Science concept, of it. And I think it can be, like you know, as you described for with Triangle, I think it can be used really well. The only ones that I have, I think, consumed are either actioners or science fiction. And this is such a fun concept that works really well on screen just because it gives you a lot of avenues to play with writing and filmmaking, directing, and it's so fun. So obviously, I think the first one that came to mind is will always be Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh,
just because I love Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think I try to watch it like once a year ever since it came out. Just it's such a good standalone sci-fi action. You know, Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise basically in this apocalypse.
The apocalypse is ongoing. Yeah.
There are aliens invading the Earth. These aliens are somehow...
They cheat.
Yeah, they cheat. And how do they cheat? They do it because they can see every single possibility that can happen and they can go into the future so they know what's going to happen. So Tom Cruise gets that ability.
Exposed to the alien blood.
So it's like if they basically are losing the day, they can reset it and go back in with the knowledge, foreknowledge.
And I love the editing in that movie, the way, because it's a big challenge if you have to like keep on retelling the same things every all the time.
It never feels tired.
It doesn't. And that's because of the editing, the way they edited the movie. And so when we're talking about time loop movies, or time travel movies, the one that really sticks with me, that really made me think a lot after watching it is Predestination. Yeah, such a fantastic movie. So if you guys haven't seen it, it's about this, I don't know, it's some kind of like special agent in this organization called Space Corps or something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of in that Gattaca style science fiction element where like there's a lot of sharp suits and it's Ethan Hawke and I can't remember the actress's name.
Sarah Snook is in this? Yes, I'll watch this now.
And it's, again, it's not portrayed as a time travel movie. It's this woman who's having trouble with her lives. There's something happens in her life and it's like it turns out that, you know, there's medical issues. I think she doesn't know what's going on. This guy comes into her life with a box. It's like, you know, well, you're perfectly suited. You're not suited for Space Corps because of this issue. But you're perfect suited for this other agency. And I think they also set up something with Ethan Hawke at the beginning.
Yeah, so Ethan Hawke has been trying to like stop this fizzle bomber, this guy who set up this explosion that killed like hundreds of thousands of people. Mm-hmm. So that's his motivation in the movie. At the same time, he also came across Sarah Snook, who's trying to like find herself.
And find a purpose in life.
Find a purpose mm-hmm. in life. And their paths cross. And I don't think I can go any further than that.
I think we can say that it's clear enough that Ethan Hawke works for a time travel agency.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and the knots that ties itself in and the realizations, like there's multiple gasp, drop your popcorn moments.
Yeah, and they keep revealing it gradually, like they withhold information and then gradually reveal things cool. right until mm-hmm. the end. And like I said, after I watched it, I was mind blown, and I just yeah. kept on thinking about, oh, but then that means that
yeah.
So
it's an Ouroboros, movie. Like it goes mm-hmm. in your head. You're like, well, how does this work here, and how does this work here? And it's one of those really clever acts of writing and directing.
That's mm-hmm. one of my favorite things, I think, about just time loopy things. Like every episode of Doctor Who that does kind of timey wimey things, I love being able to try to figure it out as they figure it out. It's never what you think, because yeah. obviously you need a very good writer to do that, and they do it so well. The episode that always comes to mind when it's about time looping is the first time the Weeping Angels show up, and that's Blink.
Yes.
Oh, and that's incredible. Yes. Yeah. That's I still think about that.
And that's, what's her name? The girl who plays
Carrie Mulligan.
Carrie Mulligan, yeah.
One of her first TV roles, yeah.
Yeah, and there's like the genius. It's basically, I love the fact that they've basically taken the time gain from the end of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey,
yeah.
where they're basically just telling each other what they're going to do in the future, mm-hmm. where yeah. it's like, you know, We're going to set up a cage. And he's going to like, well, I'm going to set up a key. And it's like, well, you can't set up the key because we set up the cage because we're going to win. And this does that where she's like pulling wallpaper off the wall and the graffiti mm-hmm. underneath yeah. says duck. And then mm-hmm. she pulls it further and says duck now.
Yeah.
And then a brick comes through the window.
Mm-hmm. And there's that the VHS tape of the doctor giving instructions or something.
Yeah, it's like it's a video split across multiple VHSs and DVDs mm. that when you piece together has a message. And
oh, man,
there's a
it's
genius
so good.
Scene where she ends
so
up good, and yeah. she's like talking to the television.
Yeah.
As she's transcribing it, yeah.
That is, again, it's very easy to say they get into the DeLorean and they go back into the past. But doing that kind of time travel and making mm-hmm. it all feel completely internally consistent.
Doing a back and forth with one character.
Yes.
That's incredible.
I mean, the handy thing is you can like write it from the end backwards and say, and then this all happens, and then she writes it all down and gives it to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's, I think it's an old enough show now. We can cheat that. But yeah, the brilliance of bringing the angels in and just the way they tied it all together. And even, I think, at the end when she meets the doctor, he hasn't read her
yeah.
notes yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's absolutely like you think it's going to be this great meeting of minds and another companion will be taken along, and then nope.
Nope, it's just a few notes on a piece of paper, and it's great. I think I get so caught up in like the logistics of it, the science of it. Where is everybody at this point, and
yeah.
where is it all working out? I hate when it doesn't work. when you can see the holes. But it's also, the story has to be good enough where I kind of don't care about About Time is one of those where I can see all the holes and I just don't care. It kind of has to work science-wise, or at least your idea of what timey-wimey science works. So we were talking before off mic, and one of those is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And the Prisoner of Azkaban.
You know the laws, Miss Granger. You must not be seen. And you would do well, I feel, to return before this last chime. If not, the consequences are too ghastly to discuss. If you succeed tonight, more than one innocent life may be spared. Three turns should do it, I think.
They set up the rules on that one. I mean, it's not time cop. If they're in the same space, they're not going to melt into a blob. But mm-hmm. like, they have to avoid each other because they'll yeah. impact the timeline. And I don't know, maybe we'll... I think it's Doc Brown says that. The universe will unfurl yeah. like a carpet if you meet your past self.
Mm-hmm.
But they use this to get out of this one scrape, and they never use it for any of the other scrapes that it would have been real handy to get out of. It's like, I think
they'll make it too easy for them mm-hmm. then.
Yeah, I think it's just something where J.K. Rowling was a bit of a magpie and just like, oh, we're stealing griffins and we're stealing
yeah.
different things from different stories.
The
and
time
whatever.
Rules work when I need them to work.
Yeah,
yeah, this works with Lake House as well. If we're keeping count of Keanu Reeves' time travel movies, Lake House, where sometimes he can grow a tree, but you know, it doesn't work all the time, and I kind of don't care because Lake House is great.
So we were talking about In the Tall Grass, and we also touched a bit on our favorite time loop, time travel movies. So Let us know, what is your favorite time travel movie? We'd like to know. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at SkipIntroMY, and you can write us at movies@bfm.my.
Don't blink. Don't even blink. Blink and you're dead. They are fast, faster than you could believe. Don't turn your back. Don't look away, and don't blink. Good luck.